My wife handed me a 3x5 card, and on the first day, they had asked the ladies if they had a question that they would like answered if they wrote it down, and they could submit it anonymously, and they would try to answer it over the course of the rest of that first day or into the second day, and I was in the second day, so my wife handed me this 3x5 card and said, could you talk about this? And here's what it said. The lady had written, resentment towards spouse, specifically an imbalance of duties or roles. You know, now that is an honest and insightful question. And what this lady apparently was recognizing that, you know, I can only surmise that her husband was perhaps not the most helpful character in the home. And maybe she felt like he was just kind of taking advantage of her and hiding behind the fact that, well, I'm the husband, you're whatever. You know, it didn't elaborate, but she recognized that she was getting resentful about that, that it was sticking in her craw, if you will, to use that expression, that it was just something that was, you know, in an ongoing way bothering her. And what this lady was talking about is what the Bible refers to most commonly as bitterness. You know, yes, in the context of our relationships, you know, resentment would certainly be a synonym. Acrimony would be a synonym. But the biblical term we use is bitterness. And praise God, this lady was honest enough to acknowledge that she recognized that there was a growing and deepening sense of distaste, shall we say, towards her husband. And the implication of the asking of the question was that she wanted to be delivered from that. And so since that point, you know, I purposed that I felt like it was time for us, you know, I think this is the third time in my days here that I want to preach a message on the subject of bitterness. And before we even really get started, let me just say this. This is just my observation, having been a believer now for 40 years or so. Among Christian people, the one thing that Christians never seem to want to acknowledge is that they struggle with bitterness. You know, I don't know why. I've had numerous conversations, and somebody is clearly struggling with being bitter and resentful. And almost before I would open my mouth, they would say, "Now, I'm not bitter. Okay, well, that's not what's going on here." And it's like, you know, I don't know why, but bitterness is one of those sins that believers tend to kind of feel like that's really a bad thing, and I don't want to own up to that. And so before we even get started this morning, here is what I want to ask you. I want to ask you right now, okay? Don't decide that this doesn't apply to you before I even get started. Okay? Don't sit there thinking, you know what? I hope brother so-and-so is paying attention. You know? I hope my wife or my husband or my mom or whatever is paying attention. Don't ascribe this message to the needs of someone else because, you know what? You would never be bitter. That's one of the problems of bitterness. It's accompanied by blindness. You know? And by just being so self-deceived. So let me ask you, just in the recesses of your own mind right now, would you ask God to open your heart to whatever He might have for you? Not for somebody else, but for you. And let me say also that there are degrees and different aspects of things when it comes to any conversation about bitterness. But don't rule it out because you're in denial. All right, so that's my free introductory thought there. You know, and hopefully God will use His Word to be of help to us this morning. Someone has said that bitter people are like porcupines. You know, they have some good points, but they're hard to get close to. You know, bitter people are often, and I'm just going to just throw out some generalizations that, again, are very stereotyped and very broad, and it's not to say, you know, this is a checklist or anything like that, but these are just some of the things that are true about people who are struggling with bitterness. They're often harsh, they're critical, judgmental, maybe sarcastic, caustic, filled with anger. You know, and sometimes we think that, well, the marks of bitterness is this outward, you know, kind of bitter kind of personality. But you know what? That's not at all the way it always is. Now, if those things are true of you, then maybe that is reflective of something. But that's not the only way that bitterness manifests itself. Sometimes bitter people are like icebergs. They are cool. They are aloof. They are detached from other people. They like to kind of go their own way, and they have an air about them that says, you know what, I don't need anybody. I don't need anyone's help. I've got things well at hand. And like an iceberg, most of their problem is beneath the surface. Then you have still others whose bitterness causes them to just kind of wallow in self-pity and sadness. And their problem isn't what the psychological world might suggest is a poor self-concept. But often it's because they are being eaten up by bitterness. Bitterness blows out the candle of joy in the heart. It's like a poison that contaminates everything in life. It's like a disease, like a cancer, that eats away at what were once spiritually healthy organs, so to speak. And bitterness has done untold damage to communities, to churches. Bitterness has destroyed countless marriages, including Christian couples. Colossians 3:16 instructs husbands to love their wives and be not bitter against them. And it would be just as true that wives should love their husbands and be not bitter against them. Someone has said, whereas oftentimes in marriage we refer to the better half, in some marriages it's the bitter half. You know, it's the problems that are just contaminating that marriage. Bitterness hinders the work of God. It keeps the people of God from the power of God. Every church has some number of, I suppose we could say, bitter brothers and sour sisters. You know, caustic Christians. And when people have that kind of spirit about them, chances are their heart is ravaged with bitterness. Bitterness has divided families. And you may be even experiencing that in some fashion right now in your own family. Folks, some of you under the sound of my voice are right now chained in a prison of bitterness. But the good news is this. As much of a prison, so to speak, as bitterness is, God's grace can deliver you from it. God can free you. God can restore the joy. God can release the grip that bitterness has on your heart. Our text this morning is really just one verse, Hebrews 12:15. But I want us to read four verses beginning with verse 14. So we're looking at Hebrews 12 and verse 14. I don't remember if I gave you a page number on this. In the Pew Bibles, this is going to be right at the bottom of page 1,697. 1,697. Hebrews 12, 14. And the writer of Hebrews says, "Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For you know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears." The title of the message this morning is Freedom from the Bondage of Bitterness. Freedom from the Bondage of Bitterness. Father, we are thankful that in your word you address so directly, so clearly, this problem of the human heart, the problem of bitterness, of resentment. A bitterness that just is so destructive to relationships, so hurtful to one's own spiritual walk, so contrary to the Spirit of God and the Word of God and the things of God. And I pray, Father, that You would guide my thoughts and words this morning as we talk about this important matter. And I pray that each person under the sound of my voice would have a heart open to hear what You have for them. It may be that they're deeply struggling with bitterness. It may be that they're not, but there's a weakness that's there, and that may be something coming down the road. It may be for a friend where they can offer a word of encouragement and help. But Father, I pray that each of us would be open to the possibility, to the prospect, that we desperately need to come to know how we can be delivered, how we can be freed from the bondage of bitterness. I pray, Father, that You would give us an attentiveness. I pray that Your Spirit would take Your Word and minister it profitably in the hearts of Your people. I pray, Father, that we would be changed, that we would be helped, and that You would be glorified. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. So if you go through the teachings of Jesus, you find that He would often use object lessons, analogies, imagery. Sometimes we call that word pictures. You find that in the epistles. Really, you find it throughout the whole Bible, where the writers take certain biblical ideas and attitudes and concepts and kind of relates it to other things, ordinary things, earthly things that we understand plainly to help us kind of understand better those spiritual concepts. And that's what's going on in our text today, where the writer of Hebrews talks about bitterness kind of in the context of a plant, of botany, of a garden, if you will. And in particular, he kind of pictures bitterness the way we might describe an aggressive, ugly weed. You know, maybe something poisonous like poison ivy. Maybe something painful like a thistle. Okay, so with that in mind, let's look at the text again. Hebrews 12:15 says, "Looking diligently," and that word has the idea of kind of looking around, watching, being mindful, being attentive, being careful, lest any man fail of the grace of God. Lest, notice, any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. This message this morning really has two main parts. First, I want us to talk about the nature and danger of bitterness so that we really see bitterness for what it is. And then we'll consider how God would have us deal with bitterness in our lives. So as we consider the nature and danger of bitterness this morning, I'm going to follow the imagery used in our text and describe bitterness using four terms that might arise in a conversation about, say, gardening or lawn care. Okay, we're going to talk about the seed of bitterness, the soil of bitterness, the root of bitterness, and the fruit of bitterness. So first, let's consider this idea of the seed of bitterness. Bitterness starts when a root grows from a seed. And you know what, folks? And this is one of the things that makes bitterness such a powerful problem, you know, such a gripping problem in our lives. That seed is usually some sort of legitimate hurt. Someone has genuinely been hurt, and that's the seed from which the root grows, the plant grows, if you will. You know, now it's possible to get embittered by your circumstances generally, but the context of Hebrews 12:15, I think, seems to focus on bitterness in particular towards other people. Verse 14 talks about following peace with all men, something that verse 15 suggests can be undone by bitterness. So when we talk about being bitter towards another person, you know, the seed may be something that other person said, something that they did, a pattern of behavior maybe, unkind words, whatever it might be. It may have been something intentional, where that other person purposely set out to selfishly or maliciously cause hurt. Or it may have been something that was unintentional, maybe something carelessly or ignorantly said, or some harm done accidentally. You know, and the offending person, who then becomes the object of bitterness, you know, he may or may not even realize that they did something. And sometimes the hurt is even imagined. And in fact, that's particularly the case where someone begins kind of down the rabbit hole of bitterness. They begin to perceive more and more and more and more hurt at the hands of that person. And you know, we understand that seeds come in various sizes, but even the tiniest seed, you know, like a mustard seed, the Bible tells us can produce a big plant. And in like manner, sometimes even a tiny offense, you know, what would ordinarily be almost an insignificant thing, can yet produce deep-seated bitterness. I mean, we have all been hurt, right? You know, sometimes in small ways like that, sometimes in big ways. And maybe in response to that hurt, we get angry. You know, we grapple with the feelings of wanting revenge. But normally, you know, by God's grace, we get over it. God helps us to move on. God gives us a willingness to forgive or forget, but a bitter person doesn't do that. They don't let go. They feel like they can't let go. They nurture the hurt, and they harbor the hostility. And see, that's where the soil of bitterness comes in. A seed all by itself doesn't grow, right? You can have a bag of seeds, and they just sit there and do nothing. It needs to be planted. It needs soil. And the soil of bitterness is a heart that nurtures the hurt and harbors the hostility rather than drawing upon God's grace to deal with it. You know, the soil of bitterness is an attitude that becomes consumed in the person's mind, in their heart, with the harm that's been done. And bitter people tend to see themselves as victims and with an ongoing victimization. And they want the offender to be held accountable for the hurt. And then typically they're looking for revenge and restitution, and they can't just get those thoughts out of their minds. And so they just keep turning it over and over and over again and again and again, and they relive those hurts. And they magnify those hurts. Now, let me say this. I'm not minimizing the severity of the harm that may have been done to somebody who is bitter. I mean, yes, sometimes it maybe is just a petty slight, but sometimes it's something really bad. You know, a person has been betrayed and lied about. They've been perhaps raped or molested. Maybe the death of a loved one was caused at the hands of a drunk driver. Maybe there's an adulterous spouse. Maybe there's an abusive parent. Okay, there are hurts that are serious, significant, deep-seated hurts. And yet, even in those more serious hurts, God's grace is sufficient to protect against bitterness, to prevent that bitterness. And see, because what happens with bitterness is there's an unwillingness to trust that, you know what, God can get me through this. God can help me. God can give me even the willingness to forgive. God can deliver me from this bitterness. But bitter people have this inward focus where they are just consumed with that hurt, however large or small. The seed is a hurt. The soil is a heart that harbors that hurt, rather than embracing the grace that God promises to all who will look to Him and depend upon Him. Let me ask you to think about, for a moment here, a Bible character that I'm guessing that all of us, or almost all of us, are quite familiar with. His name is Joseph, right? And you know Joseph's story. So Joseph was the youngest of these dozen brothers, and he was the fair-haired child. He was the favorite son. You know, mom and dad bear some responsibility for what all transpired here. But the fact is, his older brothers were envious. They were jealous. And they felt like they had been hurt by the way he acted, by the way he treated, and they harbored that hurt, And so much so that they were prepared to take his life. And thankfully, one of them had an ounce of wisdom and said this would not be a good thing to do. So they decided just simply to sell him into slavery, you know, their younger brother. And so Joseph deals with these angry brothers. He deals with threats about taking his own life and the natural fear that I suppose would have accompanied that. He's sold into slavery. In time, he ends up being the steward of Potiphar's house, and then he's falsely accused of making advances towards Potiphar's wife, which when it was really just exactly the opposite, and he was trying to rebuff those things and conduct himself in an honorable way, and so he lands himself in prison because of that. And God is ministering his life even in prison. And finally, there comes an opportunity for him to ask somebody to let people know and get him taken out of prison, and that person forgets. And you just look through Joseph's life and you think, you know what? There was some pretty significant hurts there that he dealt with. And if I want to rationalize being bitter, you know, Joseph could have certainly convinced himself that he had every right to be bitter. And you remember at the end when he reconnects with his brothers and he knows who they are, they don't initially know who he is, you know, and all of a sudden they realize when our father dies, he's going to take revenge because they assumed that like they had been, that he was going to be bitter towards them. And yet Joseph says, listen, I know you meant evil against me. I know you sought to hurt me, but I also know that there's a God in heaven. And he uses even those horrible hurts to accomplish his purpose in our lives. You know, there's a man who availed himself of the grace of God rather than discarding the grace of God and falling prey to bitterness. So the seed is a hurt. The soil is a selfish heart that harbors the hurt. And when the seed germinates, it puts down a root. So let's talk for a few minutes here about the root of bitterness. Our text warns us to look diligently, right? To watch carefully, to be intentional as we examine ourselves, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. So think for a minute about the way a root grows, right? It starts out, comes out of that seed beneath the surface. And as it begins to grow, it stays hidden among the grass, the vegetables, the shrubs. It grows down and somewhat deep. And in the early days, you know, bitterness is like that root in that it's easily disguised. You know, it hasn't come to fruition yet. The outward things aren't seen, and yet on the inside there's this festering nursing of a hurt. And that root goes deeper and deeper. And by the time you see the plant emerge, the root is actually well established. Now, it's easy to get rid of visible growth, but it's a lot harder to get at the root. You know, a plant's root can be very strong. I mean, I've seen, you know, thistles grow through a crack in the tar. And, you know, you can pull on that and you can break off the top part easily enough, but the root is still there. It's much harder to get to that root. You know, some roots, you know, travel. They just, you know, kind of go every different direction and produce many visible shoots. But the problem here is that root is there. It gets dug in. It gets a grip, and it's very, very hard to eliminate. Our text uses the term springing up, shooting forth, the idea of this new growth that comes once the root is established. You know, have you ever, if any of you are gardeners, you know, you can go out and your garden can look really nice and clean, just the desired plants, you know, and it's like almost overnight you come out there and there's just a ton of, where did these things come up? You know, well, they were already there under the surface, but it finally got to the point where those plants just come shooting up, and suddenly you begin to see what was actually there all along. And that's what happens with bitterness. You know, some of you maybe right now are struggling with bitterness inwardly, and you know it. Other people haven't seen it yet. It hasn't begun to really, you know, reach out and touch others. But on the inside, you just keep contemplating that hurt and harboring that hostility. And that root is getting deeper and deeper and stronger and stronger. And there's going to come a day when it just kind of breaks forth. Let me just suggest some indicators of a bitter root. And I'm asking you to think about these in the context of yourself. Not your neighbor, not your child, not your parent, not your spouse, not your friend, not your coworker, not your boss. You, okay? But, you know, when people have that bitter root, often they are overly sensitive to what others say or think. You know, sometimes people say they're kind of touchy. They're easily offended. Folks, if you find yourself sitting and anytime you see somebody talking, you're thinking, I'll bet they're talking about me, okay? That's an indication that there's some bitterness in your heart. You know, and as I mentioned at the outset, you know, people with that bitter root often are quick to deny that they are bitter. You know, I have had people say, I am not bitter, you know, with a nice edgy voice. And it's like, you know, not sure there's anything I'm going to say that's going to be of much help because you've already decided. You know, that bitter root has gone so deep that it has convinced you that you could not ever be bitter, even though that's really what's going on. Bitter people often look to find fault. You know, they want to justify the way that they feel. You know, do you know that there are people who are bitter against God and the church, and they actually come to church, and their goal, even though they would never say this, is just to find reasons to be more angry, to be more upset, to be more offended. Because what that does is that affirms those feelings of bitterness in their soul. Bitter people are rarely grateful people. They hold grudges. Kind of the very definition of bitterness is an unwillingness to forgive. They can be rather cynical, but especially with regard to the person or persons who are the object of their bitterness. You know, the offender, the one who has hurt them, the one who has harmed them. And oftentimes, people who are struggling with bitterness, In the interest of not having to have a conversation with somebody who might confront them about their bitterness, well, who do they go to? They go to other people who are bitter. You know, if I wanted to extend the analogy, I suppose I could say that, you know, the fertilizer for bitterness is other bitter people. You know, bitter people want people to say, yes, you have every right to be upset about this. You should be mad about this. What they did to you wasn't right. Now, again, folks, I understand that you may have been seriously, seriously hurt. But that does not constitute a right to be bitter, a right to have a vengeful attitude, an unforgiving spirit. And bitter people in time kind of reach a point of defeatism. They lose the sense of hope that, you know what, God can work in this situation. You know, it's always and only pessimism. And there's even sometimes, you know, even when they're feeling better, well, it's kind of like maybe the top of the plant got ripped off and things seem better for a little while, but, you know, it's just a matter of time, and they're right back down the rabbit hole of bitterness. You say, Pastor, that sounds really dark, okay? And I realize that you don't always see all those things outwardly because the root is buried, but what I'm asking you to do is consider your own attitude. Consider the conversations you have with yourself. You know, I remember years ago struggling with bitterness, and I was mowing the lawn. And that entire time I'm mowing the lawn, I'm just, you know, having this conversation with myself about how problematic this other person is. You know, and I'm recounting, you know, their failings and their shortcomings and just confirming those things to myself. You know, and the root goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And until you're willing to say, you know what, I see that there's a problem here. Be honest about it. All you're going to do is just keep driving that root farther and farther into the substance of your heart and your soul. And the process of being delivered is going to get more and more painful. You know, and as that root gets deep, That's when you begin to see the fruit of bitterness. Take a look again at our text. Hebrews 12:15 says, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Bitterness is troubling. Bitterness hurts. You know, I've heard it said that when you're bitter, it's like having your foot caught in a hunter's trap and dragging it around with you. And try as you might, you can't get free, and it's always there. It's always holding you down. It's always causing pain. It's just got its grip on you. And here's the reality, folks. Hurting people hurt others, maybe without even intending to do so, maybe without even realizing that they are doing so. You know, if you are trying to help someone who is bitter, you may find yourself taking some hurt yourself. You know, it's kind of like the wild animal with its foot caught in the trap, right? If you want to go help that animal, I mean, your intention is there is to free them, to deliver them, to help them, but they aren't going to take so kindly to you doing that. You know, and you may get bit in the process, scratched in the process, hurt in the process. Bitterness is troubling physically. You know, I am very much of the mindset. Now, I don't draw a direct tie. In other words, if you were sick this week, I have not concluded that you're bitter. Okay? That's not my conclusion, you know? And if you're feeling pretty well physically, I have not concluded that you're not bitter, right? This is between you and God, okay? It's not about my assessment. But I will say this, I do think that there is a definite connection between our spiritual state and outworkings of that sometimes in our health. Not all the time. And not you know, well, if I fix this problem, I'm going to be healthy. No, you know, God brings trials for all kinds of reasons. But you know how when we take the Lord's Supper, the Bible says, for this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep, many even have died because of a spiritual problem. There are physical ramifications. And bitterness, long-standing, unresolved bitterness, it can be damaging physically. It's certainly troubling emotionally. You know, the beginning of this passage was follow peace with all men, right? You know, be a person of peace. And yet there's all this unsettledness, no peace. You know, you can't keep from just continually thinking about this person with whom you are bitter. And it's certainly troubling spiritually. Hatefulness and holiness just aren't compatible. You know, neither are the pursuit of peace with others and a bitter spirit. They're at odds. If we're to have peace, if we're to live holy lives, you know, that doesn't happen when you're struggling with bitterness. Bitterness not only troubles or disturbs, bitterness defiles. Our text says, many be defiled. That word defiled means literally stained with a dye, polluted, sullied, contaminated. Anybody ever had poison ivy? Now, some people are particularly susceptible to poison ivy. You know, and once you get into that poison ivy, you know, once you've got it, it can go everywhere. Right? I mean, you can't, you're compulsively scratching it, and then you scratch somewhere else, and now it's spreading. It can spread to other people. That's kind of the imagery here about being defiled. When you struggle with bitterness, you know, it might be in this area, but it begins to affect other aspects of your life. It begins to affect other relationships. Many can be defiled. It becomes a threat to everyone you come in contact with. And then bitterness destroys. A bitter and resentful person is like a contagious poison, spreading his or her resentment to others. I know I've shared this with you before, but, you know, one of the apt descriptions of or analogies about bitterness is kind of like drinking poison yourself and then expecting the other person to die, right? You know, who's ultimately being destroyed by it is the person who's bitter. They're the one being eaten up. They're the one where their life is being contaminated, especially by that ongoing time of bitterness. Ephesians 4:31, we read this earlier, says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. You know, bitterness leads to, this verse is kind of like a chain reaction, right? The bitter root produces bitter fruit. And so you start with this bitterness, and you know, and it just, and it isn't exactly, okay, this, then this, then this. But the idea is, here's these things that just, you know, are kind of progressively an outworking of this bitter spirit, of this root of bitterness. Wrath is like a smoldering fire on the inside. And anger is when that smoldering rage comes out, you know, the outburst. Clamor is when we speak that anger, crying out, railing on people. Evil speaking, the Greek word is blasphemia. Like we get our word blasphemy. It's kind of like letting the devil coach you in how to say better mean things about that other person and how to run them down with particular incisiveness. And it's just that cutting speech towards other. And then it says, and with all malice. Malice is the uncontrolled desire to destroy that other person. And we have this ongoing debate in our country about what is the cause of some of these mass shootings that happen. And I have spoken with none of these people. I don't have any firsthand knowledge. But I don't think that the heart of the problem is the availability of weapons. It's a person whose inward bitterness has reached the point of malice, you know, where they are taking the nuclear option, if you will, to want to destroy the objects of their bitterness. And the solution is to help people deal with bitterness by the grace of God. That's really the only solution. If you don't deal with bitterness, there's no end to where it might lead. There's no limit to how much damage and destruction might be done. So that's just kind of a brief overview of what God's Word suggests about the nature and about the danger of bitterness. And now we want to see God's plan for dealing with bitterness. And I read an article on this in the individual. These next three points associated with this aren't original with me, but really were well said. And the first step in dealing with bitterness is to let God reveal it. You know, we've talked about the fact that bitterness is easy to hide, to excuse, you know, especially if the fruit hasn't fully come out yet. But that root is deep. And bitter people are so consumed with their own hurt that they can't see what's going on. Let me show you two passages, okay? Jeremiah 17, 9 and 10. These are familiar passages, I'm guessing, to most of us. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? And God says, I, the Lord, search the heart. The passage goes on to say, I try the reins and so on. But what we need is for God, who sees perfectly and clearly. He doesn't look on the outward appearance. He sees the heart. We need to ask God to show us where there may be bitterness, where there are tendencies towards bitterness, where there's a deep root of bitterness. We need God to show that to us. Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24, the psalmist says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Folks, we need to be honest and humble. You know, even if everything in you is saying, you know what, I'm not bitter, would you ask God to soften the soil of your heart and show you if perhaps there's a root there? At the end of this message, I'm going to do something that I don't often do. You know, I'm going to ask you all with heads bowed, with eyes closed, if God is convicting you about the possibility, about the presence of bitterness in your life, I'm going to ask you if you would just slip your hand up. And in that moment, there's going to be a struggle that goes on in your heart if you are struggling with bitterness. And there's going to be a fleshly side of you that's saying, no, it's not a problem. And yet, if you have a sense that God is convicting you, I'm not going to call anybody out, and it really has nothing to do with me knowing. It's just about being honest to say, you know what, I need God's help on this. I need God to show me. I may not even see it fully now, but I, you know, some of you right now have been experiencing God's conviction, and you're trying to brush aside, you know, well, but that's not exactly how it is with me. And I, you know, it's not really that bad, you know, rather than saying, God, I'm, wow, my eyes are being opened. And I see that there is a problem. We need to let God reveal it. We need to let grace remove it. Verse 15 says, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God. You can't root out bitterness by yourself, even if God shows you that it's there. It's like pulling out that big thistle. It breaks at the ground level. So, you know, you might be able to clean up some things outwardly. You might be able to, on the surface, conduct yourself in a more friendly, nicer way. You might, you know, and you can cover over the bitterness that's there. But unless the grace of God is at work, unless the Spirit of God is helping you and you're letting Him do it, that root's not coming out. It's just going to be kind of hidden, glossed over. We need God's grace if we're to have victory over bitterness. Philippians 2:13 says, for it's God who works in you both to will and to do of God's good pleasure. And this verse is often seen as a description of what happens as we experience God's grace. He gives us two things. He gives us the desire to do His will, and then He enables us. He gives us the ability to do His will, both to will and to do of His good pleasure. You know, your flesh wants to nurture that root of bitterness. God can give you a desire to have it taken out. And God can work in your life to enable you to have victory over that. Ask God to give you the desire to be free from a bitter spirit. Ask Him to take away the blinders. Ask God to forgive you for your sin of bitterness. And ask Him to help you forgive that person who has offended you. Ask Him for grace, for victory. Ask Him to soften your heart so you can truly let go of the hurt. Ask Him to remove that root of bitterness completely. Let grace remove it. I share with you a little bit of a lengthy illustration here. It's one that many of us are familiar with. Most of us know the names of Corrie Ten Boom, right? And her sister Betsy, and they were part of a Dutch family of watchmakers during World War II, and they helped many Jewish people escape the Holocaust, often hiding them in their own home. And in time, they were betrayed, and they were caught, and they were arrested. And their dad, Casper Ten Boom, ultimately died about 10 days later. Other members of the family went different places, but Corrie and Betsy were eventually sent to Ravensbrück, which was a woman's labor camp. And Corrie wrote many books, but one of them is called The Hiding Place, and many of us are familiar with that story, but it recounts her family's efforts in helping the Jewish people, in trying to keep them safe and to hide them. And also it tells how she found and shared hope in God while she was in that concentration camp. And it wasn't an easy thing for her. Betsy was the one who tended to be a little bit more spiritually minded in what she would say and think than Corrie. But Betsy was always of weaker physical constitution. And eventually Betsy died at Ravensbrück. And not long before going home to heaven, Betsy had said this to Corrie: there is no pit so deep that God is not deeper still. And I would addend that to say that God's grace is not all the more sufficient. Well, it was about 12 days after Betsy died that Corrie was released. And later she learned that her release was actually in error. There was an administrative error. She wasn't supposed to have been released. And a week after she was released, all the women in her age group were sent to the gas chambers. So God delivered her from that place for the purpose that she would then, after the war, travel the world as a public speaker, as an ambassador for Christ. And she would often speak about the power of forgiveness and the need for forgiveness. And one night in 1947, she was speaking on that subject of forgiveness in a church in Munich. And as people began to file out of the basement room where they had gathered, Corrie saw a balding, heavy-set man in a gray overcoat holding a brown hat in his hands, and he was moving towards her. And she immediately recognized him as the most vile, hated guard at Ravensbrück. In fact, as he was walking, all she could see in her mind's eye was him in his uniform. you know, and the stick that he would beat people with, and the scowl on his face, and the, you know, the insignia that he wore. And she had mentioned Ravensbrück in her talk, and this former guard didn't actually remember her per se, but he said, you know what, you talked about Ravensbrück, I was a guard there. And he told her that he had since become a Christian, and that he knew what he had done was horribly wrong. And he said that he had asked God to forgive him, and God had forgiven him for the atrocities he had committed. And then he stuck out his hand to Corey and asked, "Will you forgive me too?" And initially, Corey thought about the many cruelties that this man had imposed upon her and her sister Betsy, and how Betsy had even lost her life. And she knew, I mean, this is what she talked about all the time. She knew that she should forgive him, but she wasn't sure she could. And let me just pause for a moment and say, you know, maybe you're struggling with bitterness, and that is exactly the thought that is in your mind. You say, I know I should let this go. I know I need to be willing to forgive, but I'm not sure that I can. Let me read you her own words at this point. She says, "It could not have been many seconds that he stood there, hand held out, but to me it seemed hours as I wrestled with the most difficult thing I had ever had to do. I stood there," you know, she was resisting initially, "with the coldness clutching my heart. But forgiveness is not an emotion, and I knew that. Forgiveness is an act of the will, a choice, and the will can function regardless of the temperature of the heart. Jesus, help me," I prayed silently. "Jesus, I can lift my hand, I can at least do that. You supply the feeling." And so, kind of mechanically, she stuck out her hand and took the hand of that guard. And she says, "And as I did, an incredible thing took place. The current started in my shoulder, raced down my arm, and sprang into our joined hands. And then this healing warmth seemed to flood my whole being, bringing tears to my eyes. I forgive you, brother," I cried, "with all my heart." For a long moment, we grasped each other's hands, the former guard and the former prisoner. I had never known God's love so intensely as I did at that moment. Folks, I think we can describe that as something that is supernatural, right? In fact, what that was the grace of God. Corey had received God's grace. And she extended herself by God's grace in love and forgiveness as God enabled her to do so. She did not fail of the grace of God. Let grace remove it. One other account, this one's much shorter. There's an account about a conversation that General Robert E. Lee had after the Civil War. He was visiting the home, a home in Kentucky, a family that had been part of the Confederacy. And as he talked with the woman there, she was filled with bitterness over the war. This was after the war. And she took General Lee and showed him that what had once been a grand oak tree in her yard, and it had been decimated by Union artillery fire. And she was just bemoaning the horribleness of the Union Army and all of these things. And as she expressed those things to General Lee, she was expecting that he would offer her some sympathy. And so she said, "General, what do I do about this?" And Robert E. Lee said this. He said, "Madam, cut it down and forget it." Folks, may I suggest that if someone has done you wrong, cut it down and forget it. Bury it in the grave of God's forgetfulness once and for all. You know, you can't ease your way out of bitterness. You know, you just have to say, "God, I need your help now." Right over here on the corner of the property of the funeral home, backs up to our back, there's a tree. And a few years ago, that tree was almost had the life choked out of it. There were vines just enveloping it. And there was just precious little foliage that was actually the tree, but all kinds of foliage that was from these vines, all the way up, hanging out all the way. And I walk across that parking lot most days, multiple times, and I would walk past this tree. And then one day I noticed that some of those vines, and it's amazing the rigidity they have, were actually extending out to this really nice big blue spruce next to it. And I realized that those vines were going to defile everything. And so I took one of my kids And we went out and we spent the better part of an hour tracing down which things coming out of the ground were vines versus trees and saplings and cut those vines off. And if you go out there now, there's a bunch of dead wood that's the dead vines. But you know what? There's a lot of foliage back on that tree. And the blue spruce is safe. But you got to cut it off. You got to deal with it in fullness, not a halfway measure. I'll try to do better. God, would you reveal my bitterness? And would you use by your grace to really transform my thinking? You'll never get rid of it apart from the grace of God. Let God reveal it. Let grace remove it. Lastly, let good replace it. Let me have you turn to that passage we read earlier, Ephesians 4. It's on page 1650 in the Pew Bibles. 1650. Just right at the end of Ephesians chapter 4, the last two verses that we will look at. Well, I'll mention a few earlier passages, but we're going to get to those last two verses. But in verses 22 through 24, Paul says, you need to put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. So he says, listen, there are things from your old life, things of the ways of the world, the things that are the ways of the lost, the ways of the natural man, the ways of the flesh. And if you are now a believer, those kinds of things need to be put off. They need to be set aside, taken off, discarded. And in their place, put on things that are indicative of what it is to be a believer in God, what it is to be a Christian, what it is to have the Spirit of God living in you and living through you. And he goes on then to give a series of five things where he says, you need to put this off and put this on. Verse 25, wherefore, putting away lying. Okay, replace that with this. Speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. And then if you go down to verse 31, here's what needs to be put off. We looked at this verse earlier. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And here's what needs to replace it. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven you. Verse 31 is what needs to go. Bitterness and all the fruit that follows it. Verse 32 is what needs to replace it. Kindness, tenderheartedness, forgiveness. Now, if you think about just putting these in juxtaposition, forgiveness, the word actually has the idea of letting go. Forgiveness is letting go of that offense. It doesn't mean that there may not be consequences, you know, for other reasons, but it means that, you know what, I'm not going to harbor that resentment anymore. I'm not going to nurse that hurt anymore. I'm going to have a forgiving spirit by God's grace. I want to let it go. Bitterness, on the other hand, is holding on, clenching those fists, pulling it in, pushing it in, drawing it deeper and deeper and deeper. Forgiveness is costly. It doesn't come naturally, but it's worth it. You say, I don't know if I can let him or her off the hook. Let me tell you something. When you forgive, you actually let two people off the hook. The person you're forgiving and your own heart. The one who has offended you and the one who now is ready to forgive. And God will help you do that. The Spirit of Christ will enable you to let go. If you will let God reveal to you the reality of what's going on in your heart, and you'll cry out to him for the grace to remove that root of bitterness. And then if you'll ask him for the help to replace that bitterness with forgiveness, with tenderheartedness, with kindness, with a generous spirit. And dear person, if you are really, really struggling with bitterness, let me assure you that if you will let the grace of God work in you and through you, if you'll let him remove that bitterness, just as Corrie ten Boom did, you will find a flood of joy as God's grace fills you and the Spirit gives peace and comfort and release.